This podcast is sponsored by Runway, air traffic control for your mobile releases. Put your releases on autopilot. Runway will shepherd your release from kickoff to submission to release with no manual intervention. A single source of truth for your releases. Runway integrates with your favorite tools for a bird's eye view over release progress and blockers. Make your releases collaborative. Get a rich, contextualized release runbook that makes capturing responsibilities and tracking tasks crystal clear. Get more control on your releases on App Store and Play Store. Point your browser to runway.team. Thank you for sponsoring my podcast. I'm also revamping my newsletter. Check it out, appforce1.net to sign up. You can also find a sign-up link on my Twitter profile. Welcome to another special edition of my podcast. I'm sitting here with Nandini and Pim. Those are two old colleagues of mine that actually were on the first project that I actually learned some decent iOS development, so to speak. And we go way back. It was like over 7 years ago. And I'll first let each of them introduce themselves. So Nandini, hi, how are you doing?
Hey, Jeroen. I'm doing great. So nice to see you after such a long time.
And the other person is Pim. How are you doing?
Hey, Jeroen. I'm fine, thanks.
So, just to get things started, Nandini, where do you two work at the moment?
I currently work at Finn, Banking of Things, which is the startup initiative at ING. It's IoT payments platform. That's where I work as a technical lead.
Okay. And what is your role there, Nandini?
Technical lead, as I said.
Yeah, but
I'm responsible for, along with Pim, who will do his own introduction in a bit, we're responsible for setting the direction of the product and also deciding how to build it technically. So we are, it's a mixed bag of everything. You lead the team of IT developers, you're part of the product vision, you're part of the strategic decisions regarding the product as well, stakeholder management, technical sales, marketing, it's all of it.
Okay. And Pim, what is your role?
Yeah, Nandini kind of stole the thunder there, but indeed, I'm also the technical lead, and that might sound odd, but there's a clear split between us, where Nandini leads like the mobile team and everything that's front-end facing. I'm leading everything that's, not really visible to the end customer. So I'm in charge of the core backends and all the IoT components, which are SDKs that that we roll out. And when Nandini is very much busy with all the marketing and all the HR stuff around it, I tend to focus on the, well, on the bigger picture, on the total product. So how does my day look like? I think it's coding every day. And when I'm not coding, I'm just looking around what's going on in the market. Is the product still relevant? And how can we adapt to this, well, ever-changing market?
So how big is the team that you guys are working in?
The team at the moment is around 14 people, and it's a mixture between IT people and business people. So we try to have, well, one of everyone, of course. Then you have to think about your iOS engineer, your Android engineer, but also the front end, because we have a large set of web portals written in Angular. So we have a team for that as well. And as we were working together, we already knew this, but now we noticed it again that, well, one is none. So therefore, we scaled the team to two engineers of every discipline, basically.
Mm-hmm. So just to start at the beginning, Nandini, how did the two of us actually meet? Because we know each other in real life, the three of us.
Yeah. I think it's more than 7 years, you know. It's almost 8 years now, because I've been 8 years in Netherlands, and I know you from the very first day, because I remember when I entered that ING office at the mobile, you were the one who helped me through all of it. So the whole onboarding I did with you. You were sort of my buddy, I think, back then. So I remember you as this super energetic, active, nice, talkative person that I was spending the entire day with when I was completely jet-lagged. And I'm like, oh my God, this guy can talk. Mm-hmm. So that was my first reaction of you.
Yeah.
But you were super helpful. And you sort of took me through the entire code base, what you guys have already built, where we were in terms of features, what we plan to do ahead, the process, so all of it. So you're sort of my very first contact in the Netherlands.
Okay. And Pim, what about the two of us?
Yeah, long history as well. I started at ING, I believe, in 2011. I was the first iOS engineer there, started the project. And I soon realized that it was a little bit more on my plate that I could chew. I don't know if that's the correct phrase. So we needed help, strong help. And very shortly, you came to help on the iOS development team. And well, I have to say, there was a very nice change. I think that we did a lot of crazy stuff, a lot of good coding, and we created a lot of cool features together. You always had an eye, or you still always have an eye for the visual details, where I was always looking at, come on, man, this should just work. We should ship it. People need this. Where you always said, no, let's make it flashy, shiny, and better. And yeah, I think that together works very well. And yeah, we don't only know each other in business. I also attended your wedding not too long ago. Or actually, mm-hmm. It's already a while ago, man.
I think which it's was, 6 years or 7 years.
Time flies, especially during the lockdown, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we know each other. Bachelor party, if I'm correct.
Oh boy.
Also bachelor. Yurun and I had a phone call before, and we decided not to go into any details regarding the stag party.
It involved cars.
But it was crazy. Yeah, so we also we go back, and unfortunately our paths moved separated for a while there, but I'm pretty sure that we will see each other soon, business and private again.
Yeah, let's hope so.
And yeah. About that animation bit about where Jeroen wants to make everything look good, I still remember that wiggle animation on the login screen of the banking app. Oh. That took a week, I remember.
Yeah, but that was because every digit on the login screen had like, I think it was 5 animations that were like timed together and separately. So if you put in your 5-digit PIN, there were at the end of the screen, it was like 25 or 30 animations that had happened.
Yeah, I remember. And you were quite proud of it.
It stayed in the code base quite long. But I think in the current app, it's finally gone. But
thank God for it.
Was it buggy?
No, it was not buggy. And I don't think it was a week. It was more like 2 sprints, which is 4 weeks. But in retrospect, the thing was really worth it because it was actually a moment where we went from a somewhat static application where, well, you could check your balance and make transfers to something that was more visually appealing and it had animation. So there was a turning point, I think, also for the entire team where we understood that, okay, now we can do these things. And the feedback from the market, it was appreciated by the customer. So, yeah, I think it was a turning point.
Yeah, and also,
I think it showed how the team was so determined on making not just shipping out features, but like really good professional design, everything, UI method, UX method, everything mattered. So it was like more than 100%. I think mm-hmm. that was a big
definitely
way to show that.
So, and Nandini, what does the acronym BCF stand for?
I don't remember that anymore, to be honest.
You don't?
No. Oh my God, it's almost like a trip through a rabbit hole. I know the acronym, but I just don't remember that anymore. It's best colleagues forever.
Yeah, that's the two of us, right?
Yes, that's two of us. Oh my God, I haven't said it in such a long time.
So let's dive deeper a little bit because Nandini, the two of us met when you were first in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. What happened before that? How did you get into software development, maybe computer science, writing code? How did you, what was your path?
It all started when I was born. No. So I did my engineering in electronics and telecommunication. We did a bit of programming, but not a lot during that. So I did a bit of C, C, C++. You learn a bit of computer programming concepts, but nothing practical as such. And after I finished my engineering, I was just looking for what to do next, as in start my professional career. And that's how I stumbled upon this position for an iOS developer, and they were really looking for like new talent. And I didn't, as I said, I didn't really have an experience with practical programming back then, but the guy who was hiring, he really sort of believed in my practical personality. So he said, well, let's just give you a shot. And I still remember I walked into the office and he was starting a team for both iOS and Android. And he said, so I have positions for both. Which one do you want to do? And I just looked at both the sides because the teams were sitting separately. And I saw the Mac on one side and the Windows on the other side. And I said, whoever uses the Mac, I'll do that. So that's how I started as an iOS developer. I learned everything on the job. So it was just a lot of Googling. There were some, I think, iOS development for dummies. They used to be a book back then, so I started from there. A lot of content that was on internet back then, not a lot, but whatever was there, mm-hmm. and a lot of the videos. So that's how I started. And I very soon realized it was something that I enjoyed. It was more than a job. It became sort of a part of who I am. So it just started from there. It was an agency, so I used to work for Sujeti. So we used to have multiple projects. So I also got this experience of working on multiple things in short period of time, and you have to deal with external clients and why isn't the code ready, why isn't the UI perfect and all of that. So I think it was a lot of you learn how to hustle as well. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting, and then I worked there for 2.5 years, and I still remember my manager came to me and he said, hey, by the way, these guys from ING in Amsterdam, they want to expand their team and they're looking for new talent. And I suggested you, do you want to go and have a chat with them? And I honestly didn't think much of it because I was quite content in the way my personal and professional life was. So I was like, yeah, who's going to go to Amsterdam? So I said, might as well have a chat, you know?
Yeah, but so, just for reference, you were situated where in the world?
Oh, yeah, that's a very good point to mention. Yeah, I'm from Mumbai, born and raised.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I was working. And he suggested this ING team in Amsterdam is looking for new people. So I had a chat with actually Pim and Jeroen,
mm-hmm.
Along with someone else in the room. I don't remember who it was, but there were three people. And we had a video chat back in the days when it was not really, the technology was not really great. So it took forever to, first of all, initiate that call. And then we had a conversation. It was quite nice and casual. There were a lot of questions about just process and what would you do if you don't agree with something and things like that. And I didn't think much of it. I just had a very casual conversation with you two guys,
mm-hmm.
and then went about my day. And then my manager came back to me on a Monday saying, hey, they liked you and they would like you for you to come and join their team. And my reaction was, no, not happening. Because I'm not uprooting my life and moving to a different country and a different continent altogether. But then he said, no, just think about it. Take time to think about it and come back to me in a couple of days. And I did think about it for a couple of days. And eventually sort of, it was my mom. She convinced me. She said, you know what? It's a new experience. Go and give it a try. If it doesn't work out, you can always come back. So mm-hmm. it's not like a do or die sort of situation. So I was like, yeah, actually, that does make sense. So I gave it a try. And that's how we met.
Yeah. Okay. And Pim, about you. I remember that you were one of those people that actually told me that PHP was fine if you use it for certain things, and that it's not like a silly language, and that it's something that you can use for a lot of useful things as well.
Yeah.
So how did that happen?
Yeah, definitely. I still stand by that. I use PHP almost on a regular basis to still quickly prototype things because I'm just so used to the language and the syntax. But yeah, how did that happen? We have to go a long, long, long way back, actually.
Yep.
I roll into IT. I remember the moment, actually. I was 8 years old. I was sitting with my father behind, I think it was a IBM 8088 XT machine. And it was running DOS. And my father was showing me QBasic. And he opened a demo program there. I think it was called Gorillas or something. And then you had like the asterisk going around the edges of the screen and then in the middle saying Gorillas or the name of the game or something. And I said to him, it would be so cool if I can have my name in there and then have the asterisks go around the screen. And he said, oh, sure, let's just do that. So he went into the source code, modified it, compiled it, and it was there on the screen in like 5 to 10 minutes. And I was amazed. And that was the moment that I knew I want to be like doing what he just did. And it turned out to be a software engineer later on.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the entry level into software engineering was one of the one of the first languages that I used was PHP. It was PHP 3 back then. I just started reading books about it, trying to familiarize myself with how does it work and what are the concepts, etc. And that always stick with me. So I've been reading all the language updates from PHP 3 to, I think, what we're now, 7 or something, and everything in between. So, yeah, although a lot of engineers say, please don't use this language. It doesn't even compile. There's no type safety, etc. But for me, it's something I just grown fond of.
Mm-hmm. So because of your dad, you actually got into an interest into software development, and then you did your educations, and then you went on to what school did you attend?
Yeah, I took a little bit of a less ordinary route because I was programming still in what is it called, primary school, elementary school, mm-hmm. when I was very young, and well, schools weren't really ready for that back then yet. So I took an electronics class, but next to that always was programming. Internet became a real thing, basically, and internet selling, e-commerce grown big. And I started learning HTML as well, CSS, and of course, PHP into the mixture. I started building web shops for Dutch fashion brands. And next to that, I also created the warehousing systems for that. So magically, that really took off. And this was late 1990s, early 2000.
So how took off. And how old were you back then?
Yeah, I really have to think. I was like 19 or something like that, 18 maybe, mm-hmm. very young. And I just didn't really know what happened. Before I knew it, the software that I wrote was live for really big Dutch brands selling their clothing online. And I had to think of all different aspects. So what do you actually charge for this software? And is there going to be a license? And how am I going to make sure that it's going to be up and running 24/7? And oh my gosh, I can't do this alone. I need someone else to help me out. So because of that, I started looking for a school, and I found something very interesting at the HVA, which is the Hogeschool van Amsterdam. And this was called information engineering. And there you learn to be the bridge between a developer, which I am myself, and an end client, which were Dutch fashion retail stores. So after completing that, it was a 3 years study. I did it in 1 year, and I graduated in my own company, which was actually pretty cool. I learned to be a developer, but as well a marketeer and everything in between. So that is basically the foundation that I always brought with me, and kind of made me to who I am today.
So, but from that, how did you end up at the ING? Because Nandini was working in Mumbai, and then she was offered a position at ING. How did that happen for you?
Yeah. So this company that I had back then, which was mainly web development, really took off and went well. I had a partner in crime back then, and all cliche at some moments are true, and also this one. We broke up business-wise, and this was 2007, I believe. And the reason for that was I strongly believed in the future of mobile, and there was no iPhone. There was just Android and Windows Mobile, of course. And I was already developing for that. We grew apart. I left the company and I did nothing for a year, nothing business-wise. I just looked at the market, studied Windows development back then, and I looked at everything else that was going on. Android just released the first SDK. And there were rumors that iPhone was going to do the same. So in 2008, I believe it was March, when Steve Jobs said, we're finally going to release a real SDK for the iPhone, I knew that that was what I wanted to do. So after doing nothing for a year, self-study at home with my wife, and after hearing that SDK for iOS would come out, I just fully jumped on that. Some guy, Ivo in The Hague, who has a company called ShareWire, he was really a front runner with iOS development. He built the Pathé mobile application for the cinema company. And I saw that and I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. I want to work with you. So literally what I did is I drove there with my bike, motorcycle, with a couple of sketches in my back pocket. We had a conversation and I said, man, I really love your Pathé application that you built, but if you do it like this and make it like that, I think we can do it better. And if we maybe look at the code base together, we can brainstorm on how to do things more efficiently. And it wasn't so severe that I had like a backpack full of experience, but it was more the dialogue that we had and the very good conversation that he said right there on the spot. Oh my God, can you start on Monday? And this is where my iOS career literally started at ShareWire in The Hague. I did there many projects, and after a year or so, I grown tired of driving from my home to The Hague, which is a long drive. So I moved to ICE Mobile in Amsterdam, where I worked on many different types of applications. And one of those applications was also the ABN AMRO iPad app. And it was because of that application I was contacted through someone at the ING. His name is Johan Lemmens. Mm-hmm. And he called me up and he said, this was in November 2010, he said, "Hey, Pim, I see what you've been doing over the last couple of years. Would you now like to do this, but then at ING?" And I said, "No way, man. I'm never going to work for a bank. Are you ridiculous?" in a more polite way, though. And, well, we just friendly disconnected. But Johan Lemmens is a pretty persistent guy. So he called me back and then he said, "Hey, Pim, I really appreciate what you said and I respect it. But could you just come over for a cup of coffee then? We just like to learn from your process." And I said, "Sure." So I went to the Haarlemmerweg, a very old office of ING. And what I saw there just changed everything for me. I saw a company, I saw a bank, I saw an IT company that was way behind in the past, but also way ahead in the future and everything in between. Mm-hmm. Absolutely no idea what they wanted to do or how they're going to do it on the mobile phones, but a very strong belief that they could do it and that they have to do it. And it was that opinion of Johan Lemmens that pulled me, that lured me in. So I saw the technical depth that they had regarding mobile, or, well, there wasn't anything there. And together we could just build the whole team and the infrastructure around it. So, well, I figured just pretty much like what Nandini said, I just took the plunge and I said, "Yes, let's do this." And I believe it was on the 4th of February 2011, so I'm almost 10 years in, can you imagine? I started my first day at ING, opened Xcode and hit file new project. And that was actually an amazing experience.
Yeah, that was back in the days that you still had to do like Objective-C. And was it with Arc already, or was it still manual memory
it
management?
It was manual release management.
Yeah, retain and release.
Yeah, definitely. The good old days. Yeah, the good old days, actually. And took a lot of learning to get that right. Of course, I got it in college, but doing it on that level was just a completely different ballgame. And it was in way later in London, we were invited for the Apple iOS Tech Days, I believe it was called, when they introduced Arc. And that was just such a relief that it was there. Yeah.
Yeah, you can still shoot your foot off, but hey, it was at least not as easy to do.
Yeah. It was more forgiving, I guess, yeah.
So, Nandini, if you look back at the work at the ING banking app, because you already mentioned that both of you are now working at Finn, which is, I think, a sub-brand of ING to separate it out a little bit from the big scary bank, so to speak. But you work at the ING banking app. How big is this code base? What is it about? What does the app actually do? I can imagine that people hear ING and banking, that it's like, okay, pretty obvious, but there must be some things in there that are of interest to the listeners.
Wow, that's a very abstract question, but I'll try to give some information about. Also, my information is quite outdated. Huh? So I haven't worked on the banking app for almost 3 years now. I do keep a tab of what's happening because it's obviously a part of you. It's almost like a child of yours. But Codebase is actually quite huge because you have to understand a banking app involves not just the features that you see up front, but it involves a lot of additional framework that needs to be in place before you can actually log in, for example, because that's part of your authentication and that requires a lot of security modules in place. So the app in itself is quite humongous in terms of the number of lines of code that has been written. And also so many people have worked on that code base, starting from a file new project that Pim did 10 years ago. The team has changed quite often and has scaled quite much. So I think now they're quite, they're around five or six more than maybe squads working on that code base. And now this same code base is used across multiple countries as well. So in Germany, in Belgium, and hopefully soon in other countries as well. So it has matured a lot since then. But what we did, I think it's 5 years ago. Now I also have to dig in all the timelines because everything is just hazy and blurry. It all mixes together. But I think 5 years ago, when we wanted to share the same code base with Germany, we did a sort of modularization of the entire code base. So we split it into multiple frameworks, dynamic frameworks back then, to make sort of make it easily pluggable. So you could share the same feature with different countries. For example, some features of a banking app, like checking your balance, making a payment, having a transactions overview, authentication, authorization, these are quite common that can be shared. That is common for all the banking applications out there and is common to all the countries out there. But some other features like Ideal is very specific to Netherlands. So then you want to keep it to Netherlands and have, I don't know, in Germany, a Sofort or a KiroPay. So you have these different modules that you can share or reuse when needed and not have localized when not needed. And it has been done very nicely. I have to say, I think ING, when we did it 5 years ago, we were sort of the pioneers in this. It wasn't done at that level in any other application. And it took quite some time, effort, discussions, you know. Jeroen, you're quite aware of the iOS team in general at mobile. We were quite opinionated, a bunch of people who everyone needs to put an argument up front and needs to be heard and has to be convinced. So making these kind of decisions take some time, but that's also the biggest strength, I would say, of mobile, that there's just a bunch of really talented people that have strong opinions and would not just passively sit around, but would actively be involved in discussions. So that's what we did 5 years ago. Since then, we've had really great features like payment requests, which was actually before Tiki. I have to mention that. We came up with the concept and the implementation before Tiki. Then you have the whole Ideal payment with the scanner, Apple Pay, all of it. But what's interesting, it's because of that modularization that we did, and that also involves untangling of the entire code base. And it helps to remove so much technical debt when you do an exercise like that. A code base that was written 10 years ago, it does tend to build a lot of technical debt, irrespective of all the good intentions with which it was written.
Yeah,
including your wiggle animation that was written with all the good intentions.
Yeah, you can compare it to repairing a car. That if you do something at the front bumper, that all of a sudden, like the rear tire falls off. That was the effect that you were seeing in the banking app. I still remember that, and that was one of the biggest challenges to deal with back then, because
exactly.
there was a lot of not intentional, but over the years some spaghetti got introduced into the code base.
Well, the thing is, it's meant to happen because the technology also changes so rapidly. So you went from Objective-C to Swift to new version of Swift every 6 months or so.
Yeah.
So it's going to happen irrespective of how great developers you hire and what the intention or the process that you work with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think something like that, modularizing that code base, helps you to see those hidden gems that you might have forgotten for a while and, you know, reason about them or remove them altogether or just refactor them into something new. And that was a very, very interesting exercise, I would say, we did. And that really, really helped us, is still helping us till today, because that means you can develop faster, you can implement new features faster, you can have a bigger team and have teams across multiple countries because it's easier to reason about what's happening rather than, you know, going back and forth.
Now, is there any specific tooling that's being used to support the modularized code base?
You mean the dependency management? I wouldn't know what it is currently, but back then we did a lot of back and forth between CocoaPods and Cartridge and also Git submodules.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like we did back and forth just to see which one worked.
Yeah.
Best for us, because sometimes you can have all the arguments on the table,
mm-hmm.
but unless you actually implement it, you don't know the nitty-gritty details or the nitty-gritty things that's going to create a bottleneck.
So you mentioned dynamic frameworks. So that means that you have separate targets within your Xcode project for different that's sections correct. Of code. Mm-hmm. So that was manually managed, or was it supported with some tooling? That's what I'm going at.
I'm trying to think that now. I think it was manually managed back then. I hope it's different now. But back then it was manually managed because when we started out, we also didn't do very granular. So we weren't like every single small feature needs to be its own target. It mm-hmm. was more on a broader level that making a payment should be a separate framework. Transactions needs to be a separate entity.
Okay.
So it was not that, and also I'm quite a strong believer in don't fix it unless it's a problem. So don't try to pre-optimize anything,
mm-hmm.
And wait until it does. You start to feel the pain, and then go about with a solution for it.
Yeah, I still remember that when you got into the ING project, that was one of the discussions that we actually had on when we should fix things, and so the whole premature optimization thing that we had. I think we talked about that at length, actually.
Yeah.
So,
we had really good discussions back then about everything, I remember. Our tech sessions were, I wish we would have recorded them, because they would have been quite something to watch now.
Yeah. It would have been a hit on YouTube, I'm so sure. If you would just call it vlog or something, mm-hmm. wow.
So, Pim, if you compare like a big banking app, which has 10 years of history, you're now separated from the code base by a few years. But if you compare such a project to a smaller project, for instance, you're now working on Finn, which is still relatively new. It's already in existence for, I think, a few years now. And also your apps that you developed for ICE Mobile. What are the biggest differences with like a big code base like a banking app and other apps that are like smaller?
Wow, that's a very interesting question. And the difference is that every app that you work on, you take the lessons learned to the next application. And this is something that, of course, we also did with Finn. We really looked at everything that we learned over the last years and took that into account while architecting the new Finn application. So we immediately went for a modular approach. And not only a modular approach between features, but we also wanted to reuse the entire code base on the backend as well, because the backend for Finn is written in Swift as well. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we chose IBM's Kitura for different reasons. And speed was very important for Nandini and me to develop something very quickly, but it also shouldn't be throwaway code. So all the modules, all the objects that we made should be interchangeable between backend and frontend. And well, this is something that we learned from the ING code base, how to decouple things and detach things and reuse them. So the difference in working with them, well, I don't think you see a lot of difference, because when you're working on a very large application, an enterprise applications, you're still just focusing on that one specific feature that you're working on. So you kind of zoom into that and forget about the rest. It's not really the right framing there, but you know what I mean. And working in a new application, you just try to do it the best way you can. And you take into account that things are going to change in the future as well, and you try to accommodate for them at the beginning. Mm-hmm. For example, testing. I was always fond of testing. And some of the people listening might say, yeah, testing, really? Unit tests? No, I mean end-to-end tests. And UI tests, for example, later on. And this is something that we introduced at the banking application as well, and I cared very deeply for. And I took all of that as well to Finn and make sure that whole testing setup was just rock solid from day one.
Yeah, you mentioned testing, and I still remember Samuel, he got in as a tester, and he actually made the transition to a software developer at ING Banking App, and he was really good at it. And I think
absolutely
to this day he still does software development. And then there was the Caleb incident
with the chicken dance.
Yeah. Now, the thing with Caleb, that's Caleb Repkes. He now works at the ABN, I think, actually, as in some form of lead role. But the thing with Caleb, when he got on the project, he found pretty much the craziest edge case you could come up with. And the way he did the testing, it looked like he was surfing social media, but he had always a phone in hand. And his thumb was like flickering around on the screen. And then you ask him, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, yeah, I'm trying to like repeat some steps and see what happens if I did it like 40 times. And I was like, are you serious? But he found things that you couldn't come up with on your own. And I think that's actually part of the focus on quality that was actually ever present in the ING banking app when the three of us were there, and which I hope still is there. But do you think...
I would be more appreciative of Caleb's efforts if he was a bit humble about it. But he was never...
This guy was way ahead of his time. He had this testing routine which was just from the future or something. And like Jeroen says, always found all the possible bugs. And when he found them, he did a little chicken dance. Yeah, you developer, you messed up. And it was awesome.
Yeah, he would always rub it in your face.
I think that also describes the dynamics of the team we had back then. Yeah. It was just a big bunch of crazy people. Almost everyone was friends with each other, and we appreciated each other's work. And if you were very proud of a feature that you built, someone else would be even more proud if they could break it. So yeah, I think that was very good times, very good times.
Yeah, so let's see. So at some point, both of you decided to leave the ING banking app behind, let it be and be taken care of by other people, knowing that it's going to be taken well care of. So you mentioned Finn. What is Finn for? What kind of product is it? You mentioned IoT and some other things, but I think it's still a little bit abstract what people or clients or companies can actually do with this product.
Yeah.
So Nandini,
do you want to go? Okay, I'll go. So Finn is an IoT payments platform that is what we... Okay, I'll do it again. How we describe Finn is it enables any connected device, so IoT device, to perform autonomous transactions, including financial transactions, in a secure manner. So that's sort of the description of Finn. To explain it in a very layman language is... Nowadays, everything is smart, from your coffee machine to your smart car to your home automation to your smart fridge. So what Finn does is it enables these devices to pay on your behalf. We started with banking in the branches, and then we went to ATMs, and then we went to internet banking, then to mobile banking. This is a new channel for banking. It enables your IoT devices to do banking. Let's take an example of your smart car. When you travel to a different country before Corona, long different era, when we used to travel, for example, from Germany to Austria for skiing holidays, you have to stop at that toll gate and pay for the toll ticket, right? So what Finn would enable is that your car can pay for that toll ticket on your behalf. You don't have to stop. The moment you're approaching that toll gate, your car would detect that it's about to go through a toll gate. It would connect to the company Boomslack, what's called tollgate company, and then it would pay for your license plate, and you can just drive through. So it creates a seamless user experience for the end user. On the other hand, it provides these OEM manufacturers like BMW or Toyota or Tesla or whatever car that you're driving, fancy car that you're driving. It enables these companies to provide additional products and services to their end users. So now, as a car company owner, I can also charge my consumers with, now you can pay for toll ticket. You can also enable heating in your car seats. You can also have additional mileage, whatnot. So it's a new, a business model for these companies. So it works on both the sides. From a consumer side, it makes my life easy. I don't have to think about these things. I don't have to think about my coffee machine. I have Nespresso coffee machine. I don't have to think about my Nespresso coffee machine ordering new Nespresso pods. The coffee machine knows when it's about to run out of these pods and would order them online and pay for them. And I would just have to pick them up when they get delivered. That's it. That is more of, on a very high level, what the platform does. Pim, if you want to add something to it.
No, that's pretty descriptive. Finn is a platform to monetize any IoT solution. And it can indeed be from a large enterprise, but it can also be for someone like us, IoT enthusiasts who have a small IoT project, which they want to monetize somehow. And if you can just find that billable event in your project, what you want to monetize, then Finn can handle everything for you. And when I say everything, I literally mean that. So we take all the security hassle away, the payment hassle away, the syncing with your IoT device, all of it. So we are not an IoT cloud. No, we are an IoT payments service provider, you can almost say. There's a little bit of a nuance there, but black and white, I think that's correct. And we went through great lengths to create a rich set of different type of SDKs for different programming language. So we have them in C, Python. For Android things, we've created something in Swift, of course, as well. And in Node.js, so you can kickstart every IoT project that you're working on with their SDKs very, very rapidly. And this means that you have now, well, we like to call it Finn-enabled your device. And the sky is basically the limit. And this is also what makes the project so difficult to explain. It can be applied to everything. And therefore, it's also very hard to explain to certain people. But if we can zoom into a case, then we can always make sure that we can fit Finn to it. And that is also immediately the flip side of Finn, because it is such a broad product. That's also our pitfall. So we're really trying to scope it and zoom into specific verticals. So yeah, less sexy things. Car washing plants, for example. We have Finn enabled them as well. And I would have never thought about that when I started Finn, but it works brilliantly because we've came up with a concept called pay by plate. And you can drive with your car through a car wash and you don't have to stop. Of course, if there's a queue, you have to stop. But you don't have to pay. You don't have to talk to the operator. The machine already identifies you, knows what you prefer. Program is, and it will just start. And while you're in the car wash, the payment is settled for you straight away. And settling the payment is something that that is very powerful, because you might go to the car wash with your car. After that, you might stop at some drive-through fast food restaurant to get your burger, and maybe later on you'll stop for gas as well. Well, and all of those three things can be Finn enabled, so we do the payment autonomously for you. And because those are three different transactions moment, we will queue the transactions for the day and we will batch them, add them together and settle them as one transaction. And we do that to lower the transaction costs and the payment speed as well. And when we have the entire transaction done, we can also pay it out in a split way. So in the case of the car wash, just assume that the plant owner needs a slice of the money. Maybe we need to pay the supplier for the soap and the supplier for the water. And Finn handles all of that for you as well. So it's a very, very broad system that can be applied to many different things.
First thing I think of the examples that you point out there is that normally a license plate should pretty much be either, depending on the country, unique to a car or unique to a person. But we all know these things get copied. How does a product like Finn deal with that? Because you don't want to be paying for some criminals car washing and burgers who's at the other side of the country.
No, definitely, indeed. And fraud detection is something that is very important, of course. But if we just leave that aside for now and just focus on the practicality of it, pay by plate is one of them. And indeed, if you copy a license plate, if you do it well, it might work. But then there's also the case of the color of the car and the brand of the car, which we can identify, of course, to make sure that it all match. And we have something that we would like to call two-factor authentication or multi-factor authentication. If we're just not quite sure, we'll send a push message to your phone saying, hey, Jeroen, are you really in front of the car wash right now and you want to make this payment go through? Yes, no. So we tackle that way. But pay by plate is just one of the ways you can use Finn. But we also have created a dongle that you can put in your car, and it's a hardware dongle, so basically a hardware key, and it has the same effect. It's basically turns into a beacon, and then you can pay through that as well.
Okay, interesting. It sounds a bit, it's of course mobile is a part of the Finn product, because it's the primary user interface for the end user through the SDK. But it's also a lot more. So you already mentioned SDKs for all kinds of programming languages, and probably if you want to do OEM integrations with a car or a coffee machine, then it's already way different than just your regular mobile development. So what have been the biggest challenges in adopting this new technology? Because as from the banking context, you of course had all the internal transaction systems within the bank, which was taken care of behind an API. You would attach an app to that. But in this case, there's a lot of, I'd say, greenfield development that needs to be done to actually be able to enable these processes.
Yeah, that's completely correct. It was, again, a fairly new project, and that was amazing to do, not only for Xcode, for the mobile apps or the backend, but for all of those different SDKs as well. From the beginning, we knew we cannot do this thing alone. So Nandini is a strong believer in open source as well, and therefore we have decided to open source all our IoT SDKs because, well, we can come up with the concepts of how something should work, and we can follow all the guidelines that are out there to make something great. But I really know and really believe that there are people who are more talented than us in some development languages and can help us or contribute back through pull requests or merge requests and make the SDKs better. And this is something that we invested in heavily, and that paid off, actually. And it was amazing to see that when we open sourced the IoT SDKs, people started using them and started to make them, well, better. And this didn't really happen overnight. We had to do a lot of promoting for that. So we gave talks about it. We organized meetups where we just really went hands-on with these SDKs and really listened to the feedback. How can we make it even more user-friendly, etc. And yeah, being open for feedback. You mentioned Caleb earlier, and it was Caleb who said to me that feedback is the breakfast for champions. And I really think that's true. Feedback is so important. So we always listen to everything that people say and try to bring that back into the SDK. So very high learning curve to make sure that all the SDKs are programmatically and syntactically on par, but amazingly fun to do.
If I may add something to that, we will also, because we are a startup, so we don't have the same privilege as other departments of R&D to have like a team of 50, 60 developers. We had a limited budget and we had to go back to the innovation fund every 6 months to ask for budget. So we also had to be very smart with where we are putting our resources and where we are putting the money. So that's one of the reasons that Pim and I, we decided to have the core in Swift as well, because that's our specialty, and we could, both of us could easily start with that and build something quickly. But also everyone within the team that we hired, and we were quite lucky with to hire really smart, passionate people, that they were quite broad skilled. So everyone could help out in different things as well. It's a startup culture where all hands on the table when it comes down to it. So you can't just say, hey, but I am just an iOS developer. When it comes down to it, everyone needs to be able to help out in whatever the issue is. So we really nitpicked the kind of people that would sort of help us broadly and not just be of a very specific skill set.
So the project before the Corona thing happened, was it like a team that was working at an office, or was it remote?
It's we worked every single day at the office, so it was 100% offline.
So and
in that sense.
And how's been the online workflow for your teams?
Obviously, I think it was a mixture of everything. It's also the corona and the news that was floating around and just the sheer panic of it all. That doesn't help, especially with your mental state in general. But I have to say we adapted pretty smoothly. Pim and I, we created a plan of action right away when we knew this was happening. So we created sort of the whole workflow to get people on board to it. And then we had like Geekbot, so something for stand up every single day. We used to have calls. We decided to have video calls, and every single time you had a question. So sort of create that culture of reaching out to each other rather than becoming your own silos. So we really pushed for people be over descriptive of what you're doing rather than leaving things for understanding, because that creates miscommunication. So we really ask people to be like, over communicate what you're doing, and if there's help, then also be obvious about it, and don't wait until way too long to raise a flag. So these were some of the things that we came up with up front, but eventually it actually worked pretty smoothly, because we are developers, we work in technology, so if it comes down to it, most of our work is online. So it's not like you have to, for sales, you have to go to somebody and sort of sit next to them or across from them on the table. But you do miss the collaboration. I have to say I'm a big believer of collaboration, and there is something that doesn't get fulfilled over just the video call. You sometimes have to just walk up to the person and have that conversation face to face and say, or sit next to somebody and do pair programming, which I do kind of miss a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, we were quite productive pretty quickly.
But do you reckon that after the whole Corona thing settles a bit, that remote will be part of the tool set at Finn?
Definitely.
Okay.
I think there are also lots of pros along with cons, because it saves you a lot of travel time. It saves a lot of people frustration of being stuck in traffic, like Pim. So I think it's you have nicer colleagues in the morning who haven't been in traffic for an hour to get to work. People have had their time to have their coffees, and they get to spend time more with their families, which is also nicer for their mental well-being. So definitely, but I think we still have to figure out sort of a sweet spot where you can have that and also have the collaboration and also have the flexibility of walking up to somebody when needed, or have those, you know, team session or just team drinks where you sort of have that human interaction.
Yeah.
So I think it would be sort of a mixture of both.
So one topic that I wanted to touch upon was Swift being used at the backend, and specifically, mm-hmm. I think Pim mentioned Kitura. So how has Swift on the backend worked out for the product?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's been asked more than once to me, and the answer will still be the same, and it worked out great, actually. It exceeded all expectations. It was a little bit of a bold move, I have to say, at the beginning, but we were true believers that it will work. When we started searching for the right framework, because back then there were not so many, you had Vapor from Tanner Nelson, I believe, Perfect was there, and of course also Kitura, and yeah, we went with Kitura because it was built within IBM, and we learned that actually the Kitura team was pretty much like ourselves. It was a small team in a large enterprise fighting for their own existence and building software that was just great. And on top of that, I think it was Ian Patridge that was also in the Swift steering committee with Apple. So they just gave us a really good feeling, and we just went all in. No way back, actually. And the reason for that, I already said it earlier, is that we modularized everything, and we wanted to reuse as much of the business logic that was as we could possibly do between front-end iOS and the back-end. And there was a little bit of investment in the beginning, but it paid off so quickly with finding bugs and development speed. So yeah, it went very well. Of course, there were some hurdles along the way. At the beginning, we deployed everything to the IBM cloud, I believe. We didn't containerize it. We just deployed it, and we run it there. And that went great. But as we developed ourselves, the Kitura team also developed Kitura itself, and stuff just worked out. They added Docker support, for example. And this meant that we could move away from the IBM cloud to a ING-compliant cloud, which is now Azure. And everything just works out of the box. The support that we got from the guys, that was amazing. They really helped us with everything that we needed. They even flew over to Amsterdam and we to them just to talk about the next steps with Kitura and how to implement things. So that really worked out. Unfortunately, Ian and Nandini, what was
Chris Bailey?
Of course, Ian and Chris stopped working on Kitura last year, I believe, which is a little bit of a pity, but it's Danny Sung, I believe, who is now the community project manager or maintainer, who picked up the project again and just make sure that it lives. And that's the beauty of an open source project. And we were also inspired by that to open source the IoT SDKs. If you can't do it yourself anymore or don't want to or found another ambition, there is potentially a huge community who can pick it up and continue where you left off. And this doesn't only have to be in feature development, but also in maintenance, of course, with the Swift update. So looking back now, I'm still very much pleased with the decision that we made back then.
Okay. Before we wrap up, Nandini, are there any thoughts or tips or advice that you would like to impart on my listeners?
Oh, wow. Tips or advice. The thing is, and I've noticed that I can be very nerdy and talk about, always watch dub videos and always read the latest blog from Matt Thompson and stuff. But what I've noticed, and from the very beginning of my career until Finn now, the thing that always stands out in terms of any product, and if you look at the bigger picture, is the team and the people. Mm-hmm. So if one thing you should get right from the very beginning is to hire the right people. And when I say right, it doesn't necessarily mean just the smartest tool in the shed. Obviously, you want that. Everyone wants that. That's the prerequisite. But what I do mean is people who are passionate and have the same vision as you regarding the product, because that takes you a long way when things get tough. When things are really difficult, people who believe in the product and are willing to sort of be with you and do the struggle, that's important. And people who are, you know, people that you want to work with every single day. You want to wake up in the morning and you feel happy that I'm going to work with these bunch of people. I think that's the most important thing. And that's what worked at Mobile. And that's what worked at Finn. But with Finn, we already had that knowledge and we already had that experience. So we actually took a lot of time to build the team that we have today. And eventually, that's what matters, is to have the right people in the team. That's one knowledge that I would impart.
Okay. And same question to you, Pim.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think what worked for me, at least, is besides developing software, also develop yourself and keep doing that. Pick up a book occasionally. And it doesn't really matter if it's a new book or a very old book. Read it, because some of the principles might still apply. And if it doesn't apply, at least you get to learn about stuff and understand why things work the way they work right now. And one other thing is step out of your comfort zone from time to time. And that can mean different things to different people. But for me, it meant stepping on that stage and give presentations and talk about what you have done so far. And that is so not something that comes natural to me, but it learned to appreciate everything that we've done so far. And I get energy from telling that to others and hearing that it could help them forward. So step out of your comfort zone and pick up a book.
Okay. Nandini, if people want to find out more information about Finn, where can they look online?
So we have our website, makethingsfinn.com. Mm-hmm. That's where you can start out. We also have a Twitter handle. We have a page on LinkedIn. We have a YouTube channel. Or you can just reach out to me or Pim, and then we can also provide you with a lot of information. So we're quite available and present online.
Okay.
So just search for Finn and we'll be one of the first entries you'll come across.
I will make sure to put some links in my show notes. Pim and Nandini, very much thank you for your time, and I enjoyed talking to the two of you, and I hope to see you too soon in the future in 2021.
Yeah, in person, hopefully.
Yeah, likewise, Jeroen. Thanks. Thank you very much for the time.
Lead Developer, best practices and tips for lead software developers. PDF, MOBI and EPUB format. appforce1.net/lead developer, all one word.